My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.
I am Iron Man. Hello, hello. Welcome back to the Post Cred Pod. We apologize for the delay on this week's episode, but I've been globetrotting, except not. I just was in Florida visiting family for the first time in 18 months. So honestly, if you're like bugging us, like, where's Post Cred Pod? Fuck you, you selfish bastard. No, I'm just kidding. It was just a little late because I was unable to record, but we are finally back to talk.
This is why you're my boy. I love how you just took the blame when it's really more my fault.
I don't know about that. I was busy Wednesday. I forgot about our thing yesterday.
I couldn't do it Wednesday because I went to see the screening of Black Widow, but I also rolled going to the bar to watch the Euros on top of that. So that's on me. And then we didn't do it yesterday because we watched episode 2 like 2 weeks ago, yeah. 3 weeks ago perhaps. So I hadn't taken notes on it and shit. So then I had to do that. So I appreciate you trying to take the blame, but I definitely think that this one's more on me, pal.
I don't know. Look, everyone listening, you can tell that we're both just trying to take the blame. We're good guys.
We'll put out a poll. Who's more at fault, Brandon or Eric?
Vote at Post-Cred Pod. But Eric, we are going to talk about Loki episode 2 today, but you just mentioned it. You went to see the Black Widow screening. I'm going, I think, next Monday. So tell everybody listening, what were your initial thoughts? And then I will love to see if I match up with you, if I greatly disagree when the time comes.
So yeah, I what I wanted to do is, especially for, while I love the MCU, I'm not somebody who's been like, oh, we've gone almost 2 years, but no new film, I'm dying. Like, more so the problem last year was the lack of content in general and just the world that it was, not specifically MCU. But that being said, given the nature of this film specifically, how it is a lower stakes MCU film because it does take place in the past. And yes, while we have gotten films that take place in the past before, those were origin stories. So you're allowed to do that then. This was generally something new from the MCU and something that I don't want to say derided for, but people have had an eyebrow raised about this film. I think people have been more skeptical about its intentions, or not even its intentions. The old, does the world need Superman debate? Does the world need this movie? You know,
it seems like it maybe needed it in like 2013, 2014, 2015, not now. Potentially,
I haven't built to, but I don't think the MCU was built to sustain this film then. As ScarJo told Collider this week, she was treated, and this is her quote, her words, like a piece of ass in those first few years. And that's very true. So had they tried to give her her own film then, it would have been very different and would have not have had the strengths that this film has. Which is to say that I felt like it was a Disney Plus series in the sense that it gave the actor playing this iconic character and the fans of it a chance to actually explore it in a deeper way. You know, the only time that she had appeared before is in a supporting role. And yes, in the likes of Infinity War and Endgame, to an extent, she serves as the core of the team to some extent. You know, she's the one who at Endgame, she's the one who's still at HQ, checks in, trying to keep it going. So to see that explored from the other side, to see how without a family she was at the time, because this is post-Civil War, and then the further context of where she was in Endgame and then what she gave up in that film, it adds pathos to that. You know what I mean? I think that the film not having to worry about the where the MCU is going from here was interesting. You know what I mean? It didn't feel beholden to a post-credit scene, even though it does have one. It didn't feel like it was constructed just to move you along to that next film.
I always felt
that one of the biggest hindrances on people liking Captain Marvel is when it came out, right? For me, it felt, we got to get her in now so we can squeeze her into that next film. This is the opposite of that, and I find that to be a strength. It allows itself to focus on itself, and as a result, I found it to be tightly paced. It does have its quieter moments, but I do think it is a propulsive film that's got a sort of a Jason Bourne Bondish vibe to it. Cool. And then what I think is the strength of the film is the cast. As I said, I think this is probably Johansson's deepest work as the character. I think that Florence Pugh is a great choice to take on this role next because she's a superstar. I've only seen her in Midsommar, but you could just tell that this chick is going to be a force for a long time. David Harbour is a scene stealer. He's
hilarious.
Went
to my high school. I'm going to bring that up every time.
Really? Very cool. Yep. And Rachel Weisz is who she is. I could watch her on screen all day. So will it crack your top 5 or 10 MCU films? I don't think so. But is it a worthy addition to both the MCU and her story? Yeah, for sure.
All right. Then that's ultimately, that's all I want and need from my Black Widow movie, particularly at this point where we know the end game for her character, no pun intended. So all that, I'm on board for sure. Great breakdown.
Thank you, sir.
Well, there you guys. You guys heard it here first. You'll see it in a few weeks, and you can tell us whether or not we were right or wrong. Also on the movie front, Luca is now streaming. Another one I didn't get to because I was on vacation. But Eric, you did.
Yeah, and it's actually doing better than I thought it was because I found it to be sort of sub-mid-tier.
Which is saying a lot for someone who's on the record on this pod, like a big Pixar guy, sure, when they sure. come correct.
For sure. And I think they've been on a hot streak these last few years or so. I think Onward is better than given credit for. Of course, like Soul Onward. Was a banger, but I didn't even get through this, to be honest. It felt very half-baked. It felt like whereas like the likes of Coco and Soul felt fully realized, right? The concepts, the worlds, the themes, all that. Luca felt like a mishmash of things that Pixar just wanted to try out. Oh, what if we set it on a gorgeous coastline? Or, oh, what if we do like a Call Me By Your Name riff? And, oh, we could also change our very animation style too. It just didn't feel as fully realized as a film as I know that they can do. Now, that said, due to my pure Italianness, I will give this a fresh chance because it deserves it. But that said, I think it's probably, you know, people aren't going to talk about this like they do Soul. Let's put it like that.
And I'm not just saying this to agree with you since we argue and contradict each other all the time on this pod. But when that first trailer came out, I texted you like, is it just me or does this look mid-tier Pixar?
Yeah, you did say that.
So I'm wondering if, you know, when I finally get around to watching it, if that still holds true. Anyway, moving on. Tyrese said Morbius, which he co-stars in, is in the MCU and will be delayed until October 2022. Sony almost immediately and hilariously contradicted that statement. But Eric, as you've laid out here in our outline so eloquently, it begs the question, especially considering Michael Keaton's Vulture appeared in the trailer. Is Sony just playing coy, or are all the Spider-Man related characters going to find themselves in the Sony universe of Marvel characters once the multiverse dust settles? Now, my
I'll leave that one to you, sir. Yeah, please.
Well, my understanding is that Vulture and Scorpion and some of the other characters that we saw in Spider-Man Homecoming do belong to Sony. And that Marvel Studios, Disney owned, used them for this movie for abundance of, you know, cohesive reasons. But that even though it blurs the line, Sony is allowed and easily able to use a Michael Keaton Vulture. What that means for the greater universe, obviously we need to see in Spider-Way No Way Home.
So what does your gut tell you?
I mean, my gut tells me what we've been saying on the show and what I've been writing about, that after No Way Home, he's probably going to be in the Sony universe relatively permanently. I wouldn't be surprised to see him in a couple years or sooner than that show up in another crossover film in the MCU. But I think Tom Holland's exit ramp as MCU Peter Parker is perhaps approaching.
Okay, fair enough.
I hope that's not the case.
I'm on the same page because I think Sony strikes me as type who think that it's going well because of them. They're like, oh, Spider-Man, we fucking got this shit in the bag. Like, no problem. But Morbius, man, I mean,
Venom's terrible and Morbius looks terrible. Just because Venom made almost $900 million doesn't mean Sony is like succeeding. And I like Sony in other facets.
I now conversely can't wait for it because of how bad it's going to be. I didn't know Tyrese was in it too. They're just stacking up on terrible actors. I fucking love it. I absolutely cannot wait for this movie now. Seriously.
Oh my God.
It may turn out to be like a cult. It's so bad, it's good film.
We need to add a new category to the Jared Leto Award for the Tyrese Award for worst sidekick.
Yes, that's amazing. Yeah. Oh, and you saw Fast 9 recently, right?
I did see Fast 9. Just quickly, like, you know how it's getting a ton of bad reviews?
One of which was mine, yes.
Yes, well, yeah, you saw it as well. So, you know, I think it's over the top ridiculous. I think it's absolutely absurd. I think it's laughable. But my opinion as someone who had to learn to like the franchise over time is that we know exactly what Fast is. It is a franchise that's going to continue to up the ante while defying both the laws of physics and common sense. And because I think they've earned that brand identity, like if you were on board with sports cars jumping between skyscrapers and destroying submarines, I guess I'm not entirely sure why you vehemently draw the line at like magnet cars and rocket boosters. Like, is it dumb? Yes. But I went into it knowing exactly what to expect, and it delivered machismo cheese in entertaining, digestible fashion. So get drunk, go see it. You'll have a good time laughing at the movie.
I think that the reason that I am harsh on it, and you are, is because we know what Fast can be. Fast 5 is a legitimately awesome flick. Fast 7 is legitimately awesome.
I don't necessarily agree. I've learned to like and appreciate them over time, and now I'm a Fast fan. But like, okay, at the time, I was like, this is ridiculous. But now that they've been what they are for like 15 years, I kind of like it more than at the time of their releases. Does that make sense?
Yeah, for sure.
So yeah. All right, most important topic of the week, Eric, and I'm deferring to you as our in-house expert. Does Batman eat box?
I mean, it's so funny how this has become a legit thing. Everybody is weighed in, from like the writer of Gotham to Zack Snyder. It's unbelievable. And what's funniest is how this all came to be, right? So as the story goes, season 3 of the excellent Harley Quinn show tried to have a scene where Batman goes down on Catwoman. And DC Comics hit them up and was like, and said, quote, "Heroes don't do that. You got to cut that out." Now, of course, people have all been like, well, aren't heroes by definition selfless? That's inconsistent with the entire idea. So yes, of course, Batman eats box, as Snyder himself told us. And now his quote to us makes twice as much more sense. As Snyder told us, he likes a Batman that, every time I say this out loud, it gets more absurd. He likes a Batman that fucks to forget.
There you go.
And there
you should
you
have
go.
Checked that episode out from last month, by the way. 30-minute interview with Zack Snyder.
Yes, sir. But yeah, I mean, of course, I love that we live in a world now where like Twitter sucks, right? Like, largely Twitter and IG and Facebook, they largely suck. But when you could get a conversation like this, when it's about a topic that fans love and
uniting the people.
And it's just both absurd, but also like inherently just benign, like it's just a fun thing to talk about, right? You know what I mean? It's just a blast. So shout out to our boy Batman.
And if we want to take things too seriously, which is what we do for a living when it comes to like superheroes and fictional bullshit, like Bruce Wayne, who uses his Bruce Wayne identity to further his crime fighting career, clearly is gonna, you know, go down on women for strategic purposes. Like, that's just insane. Obviously he's doing that. Like, he needs
he's
to
a handsome motherfucker
him.
He's a handsome motherfucker, and he's rich as hell. Yeah, he is rich as hell. So
I would like to point out, though, that the showrunners of Harley Quinn made it a point to say that DC has been, and Warner Brothers has been, unbelievably supportive of their own crazy stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not like they're meddling too much.
No. And, you know, and I wrote when I did write about it that, like, I see, of course I see their points. You know what I mean? Yeah. Batman is inherently for children. There's only so far that they could realistically push things where it's changing the character for the very demo that they're trying to sell him to. So I get it, but I'm glad that it was put out there in the world. So if we couldn't see it in the show, we could at least talk about it.
Let's move on to our quick hitters. J.J. Abrams is going to executive produce a 4-part docuseries on UFOs for Showtime. As a huge alien nerd, I'm stoked. Love that.
Fuck yeah. Aliens, yeah.
Star Trek Picard Season 2 trailer teases the return of Q. I'm a Star Trek fan. I'm not as big as a Star Trek fan as I am like Marvel and Star Wars, but that's really cool for people who like the Next Generation, because he's an iconic character, Eric, that I think you'll get a kick out of if you watch.
I don't know a fucking shit about Star Trek, besides the fact that the films that they've put out in the last 15 or so years were really good.
And I'd love to see a fourth one. Chris Pine, our boy, the best Chris.
Definitely the best Chris. Unless we're talking about, unless we're including Chris Rock, because then Chris Rock is the best.
Okay, fair enough. Or Christ.
God, look at that. We seamlessly shift from comic books to theology. God, we're a good podcast.
Oh, shit.
Ant-Man and the Wasp Quantumania has begun production in the UK. Pretty hyped for that, as it will probably formally introduce Jonathan Majors as Kang the Conqueror, though, as we reported here as a rumor, we think he will be showing up in some concept or format in Loki by the end. Disney CEO Bob Chapek says Armor Wars will scratch the itch of any Marvel fan wanting more Iron Man. I think that's kind of cool that they have mantle transitions. You know, they're making sure other characters get shine and before we get tired of the main ones.
Yeah.
Zoe Kravitz is making her feature directorial debut with a film called Pussy Island, starring Channing Tatum, made all the more entertaining by the fact that Zoe Kravitz is, surprise, surprise, playing Catwoman in the next Batman movie. So it all comes full circle, Eric.
Channing Tatum's back. Cool.
Yeah, good for him. Furiosa begins filming in August. We're hyped for that.
Yeah, who's not? Come at me.
Yeah, I'm going to butcher this name, even though he's been in a million things.
Oh, yeah.
Back to Lost. Hiroyuki Sanada, who was in The Last Samurai, Westworld, Endgame, also Lost, has been cast in John Wick 4. Great addition. Love this guy.
Donnie Yen as well. So they're just... And see, this is what I think makes John Wick stand out, right? Whereas Fast makes itself bigger and then therefore inherently more absurd. The John Wick films have been making themselves bigger, but still relatively keeping its head on its body and not just going too far.
Those additions are totally on brand.
Yeah.
Beauty and the Beast prequel series with Luke Evans and Josh Gad is officially greenlit as Gaston and Le Fou in the works at Disney Plus. I didn't really like Beauty and the Beast, the live action one, so I don't much care about this one. What about you?
I just love that story, but yeah, it wasn't that good.
David Leitch's Bullet Train will hit theaters on April 8th, 2022. This is the action movie with Brad Pitt and just a stellar cast around him. So super excited for this. It seems like Brad Pitt's having fun again, which is
important. I was just going to say, when's the last time Brad Pitt did an action movie? It's got to be 10 years at least.
A long time.
So and David Leitch too. So you know that the hand-to-hand combat in this is going to be fucking out of this world. I can't wait for this movie.
I'm thinking Mr. and Mrs. Smith in 2006 might have been his last action movie.
Yeah.
A sequel to the surprisingly solid Greenland Migration is in the works. Like, does this movie need a sequel? No. But like, was I shocked at how much I kind of enjoyed the first one? Yes.
Gerard Butler Assange, baby. We're here.
We got to think of a cleverer name than that, though.
Uh-huh.
We'll come back. We'll put it out on Twitter once we get that.
My brain is thinking some combination of Bounce Back and Butler, but I can't really merge the two quite yet.
I mean, I do like alliteration. All right, you want to jump into Loki episode 2?
Let's do it.
As always, spoiler warning if you haven't seen it, but if you haven't seen it and you're listening to this podcast, I don't really know what you're doing. But you know, stay on, we need that engagement, baby.
Yeah, for sure. Thank you for that.
All right, so Eric, the episode opens in 1985 Oshkosh, Wisconsin, where the evil Loki variant has absolutely dominated yet another round of TVA cops, stealing their reset charges in the process. My immediate reaction, Eric, is I don't understand how ill-equipped the TVA is, despite being like super advanced operation. You know, glowy nightsticks aren't cutting it. Where is the high-tech Men in Black weaponry?
To be fair, I think it more speaks to the power of the threat that they're dealing with. Because if you recall, the first scene in the first episode was our Loki getting absolutely bodied by them. And as I pointed out last week, that version of him was Avengers priority number one. They were all hands on deck to deal with him, and TVA showed up and checked him in a second. So
they need long-range weapons, man.
I hear your point. I do hear your point. I just think they're trying to underscore how strong this threat is.
But it's the same reason why, like, I don't understand why Wakandans are getting into like fisticuffs like Game of Thrones. Like, you know, you have advanced weaponry, you know, long range missiles, unbelievable aircrafts. Like, why? What are you doing?
There's no excuse. Yeah. But I will say, I'm saying threat. I'm not saying villain, because I think the choice of the song here, the very funnily used, I need a hero. I don't know if that's the name of the song, but everyone knows that part. I think it's intentional, and it's something I've thought about ever since I saw this one a few weeks ago. I'm not sure that this version of Loki is technically the bad guy, there's a part of me that I think whatever she's trying to do to the timeline may actually wind up being heroic. And I will get to that more as we go through.
I agree completely. And we'll also add to that argument later on as we get through this episode. But I'm glad that we're aligned on a big theory right now. Miss Minutes gives Loki and the audience a quick refresher on what happens when Nexus events branches past the red line before Loki then joins a TVA mission to the site of the 1985 Oshkosh, Wisconsin attack, reasoning that they need a Loki to kill or catch a Loki. Owen Wilson's Mobius had to convince his boss to even let Loki accompany the mission. So everything is starting off on thin ice in this episode, which I actually kind of like. It's at this point that Mobius further explains the concept of variants, and he scrolls through different versions of Loki, which include the original Loki we know, a kind of athlete soccer playing Loki with a championship cup, a troll or Hulk-like looking Loki, a Loki that looks vaguely like Ben Kingsley if he sold knockoff incense in Brooklyn. Great joke by Eric Italiano right there. And a medieval, almost Viking-esque Loki. So to me, like, I thought it was interesting, Eric, that not only is Loki seemed to be settling into the job because he knows he can't go back to his timeline and he has his own cubicle and he's watched the training videos, but the variations were very important to me. We have the blue frost giant Loki, the athlete Loki, you know, the Lance Armstrong looking Loki. I think maybe the troll one could have been a gamma ray type Loki. We got the demon goat creature. We got barbarian Loki. My hope is that we actually see these face to face and not just these little pop-up video game menus, because I think that would be a really cool way to play with identity and multiverse. And I also want to bring it all the way back around, because when Loki was announced, Richard E. Grant, who's a very, very, very talented actor, was mentioned as part of the cast. He has not been seen. His character isn't publicly known. My thought is now that he is some sort of future Loki who's either, you know, like King Loki, who is a character from the comics, or like a cautionary tale Loki who's going to be like, dude, do the right thing. Life sucks 20 years from now. So I'm hoping that plays out the way I see it, because Richard E. Grant is too talented not to play some sort of pivotal role.
That's a great point. And for those who don't know, he's the like the scientist bad guy in Logan.
Yeah, he's also excellent in Can You Ever Forgive Me and a ton of other things. He was also in the Spice Girls movie, which is hilarious.
What a reference. Okay. Yeah.
So naturally, Loki derails the mission by stalling and attempting to bargain his way into meeting the timekeepers who created the TVA and are maintaining and pruning to make sure the sacred timeline is the number one thing. By doing so, though, Loki basically blows any chance of catching the variant. And it's here where we start to see that Loki's goal overall is to overthrow the timekeepers and take control of the TVA, something he mentions later in the episode as well. However, Eric, as Coulson told Loki in 2012, The Avengers, you lack conviction. He never really finishes the dastardly deeds he sets out to do. And I think this is just kind of laying the groundwork for us to safely assume that by the end of the day, he's more so going to be a nice, likable anti-hero, because this may be his goal now, but I don't see that maintaining throughout the series. Ultimate power doesn't seem to be his desire, despite what we've seen from him. It's just, wants a hug from daddy.
And right. And that's why I think what they did last week was key, right? To sort of have him relive all of the character beats that he went through in the MCU to catch him up to that point as a person. Right now, he's more or less the same character that he became. What I want to point out quick is that he says when the TVA cops are sort of giving him a quiz on all the stuff that he's learned, and they ask him what the reset charges do, he says, and this is going to become key, says that they pretty much disintegrate everything in its vicinity. So they make a point to point that out. Obviously, that comes into play at the end. But I actually found this scene to be the worst in the show so far, to the point where it was cringeworthy-esque in both its concept and the way that it was laid out. Loki spent the entire pilot being out-schemed and outsmarted by the TVA. For him to try and then scheme his way out again on the first excursion not even trying to further, you know, ingrain himself and earn their trust. He tries to break out the first time out. That just seems way below the intelligence and the cunning of the character that we've come to know. He knows that he's essentially both stuck in time and with the TVA. There is no rush. So for him to just leap into that Shakespearean-esque speech right off the rip, I get that that's what he does, but he's smarter than that, you know?
And it I just disagree completely, the wrong way. Actually. Okay. I got to take the opposite side. I think it's so on brand because Loki, from start to finish, has been so blinded by arrogance that he always overestimates his own ability, despite him being very capable, and always rushes into things before it's properly planned out and situated for him to be in a position of success. And I also think it further underscores the point from last week of him being outsmarted. Yes, they blew their chance, but at the end of the day, Owen Wilson's Mobius is like, you're full of shit, and I'm still on to you, and I'm still got the upper hand. So I actually think it was a humorous moment that played into his character and sets up further development later in the series. Because as we know, we see something not similar-ish, but on the same line of, you know, looking out for numero uno later in this episode. And I just think it is setting us up to see a change.
Yeah, I mean, look, the way that they ended the scene, saved the scene, and makes the scene and is the whole point of the scene. And it was great, right? And that just adds to how great Owen Wilson has been this whole time. But I feel like for this character, for him to go, as I keep saying, from the Avengers number one threat to like this bumbling sort of, I'm going to put on a show, it doesn't feel quite consistent enough.
But you got to remember, he is now facing an unheard of greatest power in the universe.
Exactly.
Something that is completely, but something that is completely overwritten his very understanding of the fabric of reality. So it doesn't even remotely surprise me that he is bumbling a bit at first. I think this is a character that needs to learn in order to move and grow and do other things. And I think absolutely there's going to be some double crosses later in the season in which he's more adept. He's learned how the TVA works. He knows their weak spots. So I do think this is very on brand and in line with what a trajectory would be for this character at this point.
Fair enough.
And like, listen, you know, everyone around him, like Thanos and everyone in 2012, the Avengers was like, you're just a little boy playing at being a king. So even back then when he was number one threat, I still think he was over his head.
Yeah, true. Okay.
All right, Mobius convinces Renslayer to give Loki another chance, despite everything we've just said. After researching TVA files, including Asgard's inevitable Ragnarok, which I did like seeing that he has a visible reaction to, Loki theorizes that the variant is hiding in near-apocalyptic events throughout time, where their actions do not affect the timeline because the ultimate destruction is inevitable. I do want to see this theory tested further. We'll talk about it. Loki and Mobius then confirm this possibility by visiting Pompeii in 79 AD, right before all hell breaks loose. So, Eric, I got a few things here.
Me too. So go ahead.
Let's do it. Ragnarok was always supposed to happen based on the file we see that says zero variation detected. Because of that, I do wonder if we go revisit it in Loki. Because that seems
that'd
like
he be did, great.
I can't change it, but I need to go do something or tell Loki something. I don't know. But that to me, I'm like, we're going back, aren't we?
Yeah, that'd be great call.
I have a feeling, and this is when I start to get it, that the timekeepers are either not real or they're dead or they're missing. And it is some sort of Wizard of Oz situation going on. And assuming Kang isn't in control and isn't like one of them and isn't like a central figure, I do think there's going to be some sort of twist here where maybe including Renslayer, maybe not.
We're on the same page, brother.
Yeah, there's something going on. And I think it's going to, and we'll get to this, tie back to Lady Loki. And I want to know, too, why does anyone accept that the timekeepers are real and must be listened to if they haven't seen them? Because Mobius says, I've never met the timekeepers. That's bizarre to me.
Well, but that's just how religion works, right?
Oh, shit. That's a good point. Wow. You just answered that. Oh, well played, sir. Well fucking played.
Christ. No, I'm just kidding. I'm totally kidding. I've never been to church once, I swear to God, if he's real.
Like, knock on wood just in case so I don't get smited.
Okay. So Yeah, Renslayer is sketchy as fuck. Like, that is
super
so,
sketchy.
It's and especially considering at the end of this, when she sort of kicks into gear and grabs her baton, she's more invested in this specific case than any sort of general timeliney threat, and they make that clear. In the comics, she is a love interest of Kang's. So I'm wondering if perhaps Renslayer, the TVA, and the Timekeepers, and this is a two-parter point here, are not the force of good that they're selling themselves as, and unfortunately, and eventually, heartbreakingly, Mobius doesn't know that.
Yeah, he seems to be in for a rude awakening as the consummate company man, believing he's doing the right thing.
And on top of that, the pair also discuss another analyst that she has working for her that Mobius has not met. I'm assuming this person is going to pop up because they discuss all the things on her shelf and how some of them are from his cases and some of them are from this shadowy person. So there's a lot going on here that screams shady as fuck. The pen that he uses to sign the report, and now this is a bit of a stretch here, right? But I'm going to take a stab, is from Franklin Delano Roosevelt High School, which from my Google is in Brooklyn. Now, this is a bit of a stretch, and I'm aware of that, and I don't necessarily believe this, but I'm just going to point it out because it was out there in the world. Last week, a clip of what some fans thought was Peggy Carter being brought into the TVA went viral. Now, Peggy and Brooklyn are both two direct connections to our boy Steve Rogers, who we know in the MCU terms is one of the OG timeline fucker-uppers. Like, Endgame ended with him fucking up the timeline. Now, they do explain in the pilot that what the Avengers did, they were supposed to do, but Steve Rogers did bounce around the timeline.
But then did go to reset them. So that's what I'm thinking. Maybe it's not a variant.
But I'm just drawing a couple dots here. Just drawing some dots that both, you know, they make sure that you see where that pen is from. So
I don't think Chris Evans is going to pop up in the show, though I'd love it. But based on everything you've said, and I was thinking the same.
Oh, I'm not saying that he's going to pop up in the show.
No,
perhaps it may lead to, as we talked about in Falcon, they refuse to say he's dead. They just don't use the word dead.
Whether or not it's Peggy Carter, it just makes too much sense that Steve Rogers is the ultimate time traveler of our Earthbound heroes. This series is all about time travel. I have to believe there's going to be at least one line of exposition.
Loves to play act him. As him.
Yeah. I have to believe that like he's still in his timeline. Some throwaway line where like, Steve Rogers ending.
Right,
yeah.
Exactly. Something like that. Now, a couple more points zooming ahead a bit. As they research, right before they realize go out to do the Pompeii thing, Loki goes to ask like the TVA library keeper type chick for the files on the creation of the TVA, which she of course says can't see them. They are classified. So I'm putting it out there right now, stamping it. I think that the TVA is bad and that the multiverse is actually good and that they're keeping things together for nefarious reasons. That is my theory right now.
I concur, particularly on the multiverse stuff, which we will also get to in a little bit.
And then one final point. This, to me, is a better display of Loki's intelligence.
Well, listen, maybe he's better
but I feel like this is more on track with like him putting this together and figuring out how a Loki should act is in direct contradiction of how a Loki did just act.
I don't think so. And I'll say why, because I think there are different types of intelligence and we're seeing his desk work and cleverness is great, but his world domination isn't. You and I are good writers and creative thinkers about story and plot and characters. I don't think you and I could solve a quadratic equation to save the fucking universe.
Dude, no. Once I was in Algebra 2, forget it. My math skills went off a cliff.
Exactly. So there's different applications of intelligence. And I think we're seeing who Loki was always supposed to be and not the person he thought he was meant to be.
Yep.
Burdened by glorious purpose? No. Burdened for an intense internal journey of reaching that Willie Loman, I don't care what everybody else thinks. I'm going to be me. After confirming their hypothesis, Mobius and Loki sip coffee and trade ideologies, with Mobius pointing out that Loki's origin of Odin, Asgard, and Frost Giants is just as absurd and therefore no more less legitimate than the kind of wonky TVA that is still a little bit inexplicable. Existence is chaos, he says. I'm just lucky that the chaos I emerged into gave me all this, my own glorious purpose. Loki questions Mobius about the nature of free will and the timekeepers, to which Mobius gives him a further company line. Loki mentions that no one good is ever truly good, and suddenly Mobius has an epiphany, kablooey. After some cross-referencing, the pair realize the variant is hiding in 2050s Alabama. And then what I believe happens is the first time we've ever traveled to the future in the MCU. I don't think we've ever done that before.
Oh, interesting. And you know what's funny?
The past.
That reality reminded me a lot of the X-Men days of future, past, future.
Yeah, I mean, it was just dingy, that dark, it was neon lit
world.
Yeah.
But so I think that this is an important scene that I put in here for two things. One, I think this is arguably the MCU. I mean, sorry, this is arguably the thesis of the MCU going forward from here on out. Don't worry about the absurdity of it all and trying to explain it all. Just come with us on this ride, right? And now, secondly, and I put this in here specifically, folks, I have bad news. I have a feeling that they are setting us up for Mobius heartbreak, whether that means, you know, his world is shattered or the TVA, you know, is wiped out by the time the show is over, or he sacrifices himself for the greater good. Between my mistrust of Renslayer and the TVA and his endearing belief in his purpose and general kindness to everyone on the timeline, yep, despite the fact that he acknowledges existence is chaos, he still goes out of his way to make people feel better. And just the clear work that they've done to make this character the breakout of the show. I'm warning you now. I've got a bad feeling for how it's going to end for our boy. And I hate to break it to you, but they are planting a flag in this one. That's quite clear to me. That's quite red to me.
Given our skepticism of the TVA, given Mobius's relative innocence in that, and given the screwball detective story format of Loki,
the partner's just got to die, right? Yeah.
Partner's got to die, but I better get before that happens, Loki in like episode 4 or 5 being like, we did it your way. Now we're doing it my way. You know, like once they realize that shit's all fucked up and they need to switch tactics, they I need that specific line.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Because Mobius is, I'm just seeing it play out now. He's going to help them infiltrate the TVA further, and they're going to have to sneak through the place, and he'll know exactly where everybody is at every moment.
He'll bring it down from the inside, if our theory is correct.
Yes. But again, just keep an eye on that and brace yourself for it, folks.
Yeah, I mean, it really seems like they're getting up to some serious shenanigans over there. All right, Loki, Mobius, and the TVA agents are ambushed there by the variant who possesses the bodies of several locals and TVA agent Hunter B-15, who reveals that she told the variant the location of the timekeepers and how to find them. And might I just add, she's not in a good place when they find her. She is all sorts of messed up.
Now, I wonder if that's how everyone who wakes up mind-controlled turns out.
I'm not sure, because the other one whose name escapes me right now.
Oh, yes. Wasn't. You're right. Correct.
The variant then reveals herself to be a female version of Loki. She rejects his offer to overthrow the timekeepers together. She sends the stolen reset charges to various points along the sacred timeline, creating numerous new branch timelines and throwing the TVA into immediate chaos and disarray before teleporting away. And Loki decides to follow her. So, Eric, like we've been discussing this whole time, Lady Loki doesn't have any interest in teaming up with Loki and taking over the TVA. She resets multiple timelines, but we don't know what her endgame is or what the specific purpose of that. We know the TVA maintains sacred timelines by resetting any variations. We don't know why she wants to kind of break that mold. We've been told the multiverse and multi-timelines end in time wars that destroy reality. But why? What are the actual dangers of branching timelines? And is the idea of a sacred singular timeline just a power grab by, if not the timekeepers, Renslayer, or whoever is pulling the strings? And further building off that, Loki follows Lady Loki through the time portal. To me, she seemed to leave the time portal open intentionally so he could follow her, so they could continue the discussion. So as you mentioned before, and I agreed with, she's not a bad guy. We're going to learn that she's causing damage for the greater good, and maybe something is corrupt with the TVA at the highest levels. That's what all this says to me, because unless we get like a whole, you know, monologue from her next week with her twisting her mustache and being like, here is why I, you know, reset the whole timeline. Ah, ha, 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 ha. There doesn't seem to be much reason for it, or at least we are not aware of the motivation.
And I think it's key that she said I don't want to overthrow them. She wants to destroy them. That's why.
Because maybe there truly is multiversal existence isn't necessarily bad. It may be complicated, but it just may be, you know, if there's another timekeeper group that want to take over and this timekeeper group's like, we're going to prune you.
As I believe DJ Khaled once said, more life.
yes, the great philosopher DJ Khaled.
So look, man, this box cart scene is my favorite of the series so far and epitomizes why everything that I love about the show so far. From the second Mobius walks out of Renslayer's office to kick this whole thing off, and they ratchet up that, what is that, like a violin score? That
really cool score.
We are cooking with gas at that point. He walks out to have a quick rat-a-tat-tat with Loki. He hands him his blades, only for that sort of main cop to walk by, snatch them, and say, absolutely not. So they're really cooking with gas at this point. So here's why I think this is sort of, this show boiled down to all of its best tenets. Heavy sci-fi themes, right? The very nature of hopping through time to different disasters, because that's where the variant can hide undetected, is fascinating.
Yeah.
The very vastness of both the hurricane and the rocks cart. Like I said, it reminded me of a Days of Future Past, very sci-fi-esque world. Love that. The crime thriller vibe. The question around who the variant is, what they want, which one of these many regular people they could be, the TVA literally stalking the aisles of the rocks cart trying to track her down. It sort of reminded me of Robert Graysmith in that creepy dude's basement in Zodiac.
Fun fact quickly, that creepy dude was played by my father's childhood friend who also voiced the Roger Rabbit.
I think that's the second time on the show you dropped that fact. But yeah.
I got a name drop.
There's sort of that increasing tension, and the environment becomes more ominous the more they explore it. The action, Loki fighting himself, different variants popping up to fight him. Awesome. The comedy, it's packed with the usual Marvel quips that we've come to know and love. Some don't always work. These ones work, from when that cop is like, absolutely not, to when Loki says, I know why Thor finds this so annoying. Like him acknowledging how much of a pain in the ass he is, to him saying, I wouldn't treat me like this. You know, and then of course, the score, the Nordic, almost Game of Thrones-esque score, which I think brings this show up to a new level entirely. So this entire sequence, I think, is one of the best that the Disney Plus shows have done yet.
It's a very heightened sequence, and as it serves as the climax for essentially the first act of a three-act play, I think it was very, very effective. We now know the central conflict, the central players. We don't know the motivation, so we have questions and answers at the same time, which is how you build intrigue in a story that's ongoing.
Yeah. Now, let me ask you this. Because they brought up specifically that Lady Loki knows where the timekeepers are. Do you think, and because they present it as if it's obvious what she does, but with a little bit of thought, did she bomb the timeline itself, or did she bomb the timekeepers who are the ones keeping it all wound up? You know,
I have no idea. That is a next level, you know, idea. I have no idea. We know that it's now branching very closely to the red line because it's multiple timeline resets at clearly predetermined positions, but what ultimately was the reasoning behind her placement, I don't know.
Yeah, so hopefully we find that all out next week as soon as it starts, because I am now, if you weren't all in before, this last 10-ish minutes
ratcheted this show up to, and then it's like, all right, now we're off and running.
Episode two is much better than episode one, and we both liked episode one.
Yeah.
All right, before we get into our awards and categories, I have a handful of quick questions for you that I think are important to discuss that everyone might be wondering. Number one, most importantly, Eric, will Mobius get to ride a jet ski by the end of the series?
Well, as I just said, I don't think it's going to end well for our boys, so unfortunately not.
Oh, God, that's going to be a heartbreaker. All right, number two, I want to go over a little bit of the timeline wonkery. When you insert yourself into a pre-apocalypse timeline, they argue you can get away with anything because the inevitable destruction covers all potential variants.
Well, I think it depends on how close to the end you are. I don't think you could show up 6 years prior and be like, oh, this world is going to end, you know? So,
of course, but I also think it may, that seems like such a catch-all. And I think it also may depend on how significantly you try to influence events, because Loki and Mobius go back, and what does Loki really do? He stands in the middle of a street and yells for about 60 seconds. Ultimately, in the grand scheme of the timeline, not much. So I'm wondering if you go back in time and maybe kill someone or save someone of importance who may or may not have died in the cataclysm, what happens? You know, I think they jumped on this theory, which makes a lot of sense, but I think there's going to be more experimentation with it in this show, and they're going to realize there are different facets and levels to what they thought.
When they show up to the Renaissance Fair, Loki does ask the version of, why not just go back in time and kill baby Hitler? Like that type of thing. Like, yeah. Why can't we just do that? And they explain it. I don't know exactly what he said because it was very sci-fi jargon-esque, but I think they do attempt to explain what you just asked and why you can't just do that.
That's a little bit different than the hiding in the pre-apocalyptic, no variant detected type scenario. So I just think, you know, now they have to go find her. They're going to find another apocalypse. And I think they're going to start to see splinters of what they thought was reality.
Right. Okay.
All right. Do you think there will be cameos of dead or unexpected characters based on the time hopping? And if so, who?
Oh.
We already know that Kate Herron, the director, confirmed no Mephisto.
That's a great question. I wouldn't. I mean, it's tough to say no, right? Legitimately cannot rule it out on this point. Given my Hitchbong theory about Steve Rogers, maybe our boy.
Fuck, I think it. Someone's going to show up. That's interesting or fun or unexpected.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
This is kind of more of a dumb question, but why isn't anyone else time traveling? If Tony Stark figured it out, which means other geniuses, maybe, you know, take them a little bit longer, but they could. And B, people can occasionally run amok in the TVA. Like, I don't understand why this isn't more prevalent.
It's dangerous as fuck, man.
True.
If you mess with time, it tends to mess back, as they once said. So.
And then this last question came from Twitter at Nick B Direct. How do we feel about Tobey Maguire and Andrew Garfield being considered variants in Spider-Man No Way Home? I thought that would be a cool little tie-in to kind of put a bow on everything and then, of course, set up the solution in Doctor Strange 2.
Interesting. I do like that. However, Alfred Molina said that Doc Ock's story is going to pick up from where it left off. So wouldn't that mean that the universe would have to already exist? I mean, see, this is where we're just in the fucking weeds, right? So, but in terms of where the MCU was going, I could definitely see that that's how it works out. I think it's a good theory, a solid theory for sure.
Maybe the universe did exist until it was pruned. And so picking back up is just like, oh, it was pruned and now it's growing back.
Yeah, right.
I don't know. All right, let's move into our awards and categories. Those were just some fun questions that people might be thinking. If you guys have any of your own, any theories or whatever, hit us up at PostgradPod. We'd love to hear them, or any questions you want us to answer. First award, though, Infinity Gauntlet Award for the real MVP. Eric, I am going with clever and creative exposition. Because every single show like this with a sci-fi bent or say superhero fantasy stuff, they need comprehensive explanations and descriptions of potentially dense concepts and ideas and mysteries. But to me, Loki is managing to deliver all that in incredibly fun, engaging ways that also push the plot forward. You know, Pompeii, that whole sequence, it's all exposition, but it, just like we talked about, raises really interesting theoretical questions in the process that are exciting to dive into instead of just being bland info dumps. You know, it is implications for the grander MCU at the same time as necessary information. So good job, Michael Waldron, head writer of Loki.
Great call, because that was something that I thought of too, the way that they're able to just exposition dump the fuck out of the show, but make it still intriguing. And for as dense as it is, they're doing the best that they can to make it as consumable as possible. I'm going with the two different vibes of the show, the crime thriller vibe that it has, and then the kooky workplace office-esque vibe that it has. And I think that those two things, along with the multiversal sci-fi, are sort of like the pillars of this show.
I love that. And they're blending those tones very well. Whereas I think we both said in WandaVision and Falcon Winter Soldier, there was occasionally this conflicting or oppositional vibe surrounding the series.
Yeah.
The Thor the Dark World Award for the worst performance, I'm going with the TVA's bedside manner. And I'm going with that because these semi-omnipotent beings adhering to what will happen will always happen premises, they care very little about the lives of the people they interact with. You know, we see it here at the Rocks cart. We saw it last week with the little French girl. They have zero care or connection to this world. But as
Obvious does. And yeah, that's why and that's why I'm very worried for him.
But as Doctor Who excellently portrayed in its own Pompeii episode years ago, even saving one life or comforting one soul is worthy and valuable. And yes, that is what Mobius does. I'm going to bring him back in more for these awards, but there is value and worth in doing that.
Wow.
In being a human in terms of your connection.
So for my Thor, the Dark World, I'm going with the heavy handedness in which they constantly refer to the variant as he. Yeah. And you and I had talked about this when we had screened it. If you have any indication that it is not, in fact, a he, the obvious of it, the obviousness of it is so fucking ridiculous. It's like a smack in the face. I mean, I get it that they were trying to set you up to be like, a woman villain, you know what I mean? Which in it of itself is kind of a very dumb twist. Like, oh, it's Loki, but a girl. All right, like sick, whatever. But the way in which they laid it on so thick, I thought it almost undercut the twist. I wish if they would have been a little bit more vague about it, I would have been more shocked by it. To be fair to them, reports that this chick had been cast in this role came out months before the show aired, so I sort of knew it was coming regardless.
Yeah, I think they didn't exactly hide the ball on that one. Let's put it that way.
Exactly.
All right, the Jarvis Award for best performance by anyone except the lead actor. Again, Owen Wilson. How else can you go?
I think we may need to officially rename this award. Oh. Mobius Award for best performance by anyone except the lead actor. Because
I mean, particularly as Jarvis is no more. Now he's Vision. I think we have to officially rename it. You're right.
Stamp it. It's done. Boom. The Mobius Award.
So all I can think of now, especially two episodes into Loki, is Mobius sitting behind a desk and coordinating missions for Randall Park's Jimmy Woo to carry out in the material world. Give me that cop procedural multiverse Marvel show.
Bureaucracy, baby. Let's go.
Let's do it. That's what I want. You have the same one?
Yeah, I just renamed the whole fucking award. What do you think I have?
You know what? Fair point on that one. Fair point. All right, the Tony Stark Exposition Award, aka the Star-Lord Who Award, for shit we need explained to us. And you mentioned it, you did give a good answer, but the blind faith in the timekeepers by the TVA bureaucratic agents. Eric, if you tell me that our podcast has a new boss who wants us to focus solely on recapping old episodes of That's So Raven, I would have some questions that require a face-to-face meeting. You know, I'm not just going to be like, you got it, bro.
I would say that this is all they know. This is the world that they were born into. This is why they were created. They may not have the free will to think outside the box like that, you know?
But isn't that what development and growth and advancement of species is all about? The questioning of one's own reality.
Well, to that end, I will say for me, I need the timekeepers explained to me more. Now, given that Lady Loki apparently just bombed the shit out of them, we should hopefully get more about them next week, right? Because at this point, you got to assume they're all hands on deck. Yep. Given the way that the panic in the TVA set in immediately, like you got to think this is threat
level fucking midnight, you know? So
yeah. So the Time Stone, that Real Quick Award, aka the Rewind That Real Quick, we had already
I've got a great one.
Yeah, mine was what we already mentioned. In the background of episode one, which I was cheating a little bit, it looked like Peggy Carter was potentially being escorted by a TVA agent from a portal. Whether or not that means we get more explanation on Steve Rogers, I don't know. I hope we get a little throwaway line or something. I don't know.
To be clear, I do think that this is an extraordinary stretch. Yeah. Extraordinary stretch. Just to be clear. For me, I am going with Owen Wilson telling Loki, take a breath. Noted. What a glorious line reading, man. Like, just like little boying him, like just that classic like boss at work telling you to check yourself. Amazing. And really just him busting his balls in general has been an absolute joy of this show.
This segment is really turning into the Mobius love fest, because put this in Odin's Vault Award, aka put that in the museum. I'm going with Mobius's mustache. And I don't know why, but it really completes the entire aesthetic of this mid-level bureaucratic time cop. You know, if Loki is burdened with glorious purpose, then Owen Wilson is burdened with glorious facial hair.
Wow. Owen, I didn't know he could grow that.
Who knows if it's real or not, but all I know is it's wonderful.
On this show, it's real.
Yeah, exactly.
I am going with the Lady Loki reveal. While we knew it was coming, again, I cannot praise this score enough. I think it's fucking fantastic. I loved the camera work of the red lighting, and I love the dramatic plotting of, like, as they come face to face, the timeline is also being bombed. The TVA is panicking. Owen is running to catch up in them. So there's sort of a lot of dramatic beats hitting at once here. And then I love Loki himself weighing his choices and deciding to choose chaos. So, yeah.
I like that. All right, not to be a dead horse, but Cap lifts the Hammer Award for Best Hero Moment. Mobius telling his TV agents to go easy on the scared citizens just because they exist outside of time and have no connection to our world or any real impact from the events that transpire within it. Doesn't mean you can't spare a kindness. And Mobius seems to understand that what makes life worth living is the connection to other living beings, more so than those around him, which, again, to your point, sets up tragedy, which I'm not ready for, Eric. I can't do it.
I have something from the exact same scene. And perhaps this speaks to how this episode is light on traditional heroic moments, but I'm going with the janitor asking if TVA is FEMA and if they have a chopper, because we got women and children here. That guy was the only hero of the whole show.
Great call. That's a small moment of selflessness that it really speaks volumes.
Yep.
All right, Eric, what's the worst thing you can say about this episode?
So I've said it. Again, I'm struggling to find complaints about the show because I really think it's doing a lot of things at once. Well, all the way down to the score, as I've said 1,000 times. But I, like I've said, I think Loki trying to trick the TVA on their first job out and doing it so pathetically just was inconsistent with the intelligence that the character has shown both in this series and across the MCU as a whole. Yes, I know he doesn't always see his plans through, but he does usually start them off well. So for him to just sort of steamroll into this, I'm going to do this Shakespearean performance to try to trick them when they are probably at the highest alert possible. Didn't love it.
Fair. I'm going with the Lady Loki reveal. I don't think it's as impactful for non-comic book readers, because if you go into this not knowing much, it's just some actress in a silly costume and they've been building it up for 2 episodes. You're like, huh? So even as Kevin Feige continues to stress that anyone can enjoy Marvel series, which I agree with to a point, it is also clear that fans with deep knowledge of comic book lore and MCU history will be the ones getting the most out of it.
Yeah, for sure. I've said this, so I'm not going to dive back into it. I think the Rock's Cart sequence was one of the strongest of the Disney Plus shows yet.
Eric, so what is the nicest thing you could say about this episode, building off that compliment?
Sorry. That, yeah.
Well, I think you're very right. For me, I think it shares strands of DNA with Alex Garland's Devs, which is on FX on Hulu. Go check it out. And its depiction of free will versus determinism as a major organizing principle and ruling thematic ideology. And for anyone who doesn't know, determinism is the theory that all action of humanity is predetermined. There is no such thing as free will. We don't make choices. We just follow a trajectory and path that has already been set. So despite that, Loki feels very malleable and unexpected, despite the somewhat rigid dividing lines that are free will versus determinism. And I hope that philosophical debate is something that continues throughout the show. All right, Eric, stuff that we think is cool that needs mentioning. I got a couple here. Miss Minutes is voiced by Tara Strong, who, if you have watched any cartoon of the last 25 years, you have heard her. She's Barbara Gordon. She's Timmy in the Fairly Odd Parents. She plays multiple Powerpuff Girl characters. She's Raven in Teen Titans. Just an absolute icon of voice animation work.
Wow.
Roxxon, which is owned by the Roxxon Corporation. The Roxxon Corporation is actually something we've seen in the background in multiple Iron Man films and other MCU projects. It is essentially a rival to Stark Industries. So I like that they're still kind of weaving in universe building a little bit. And then finally, Tom Hiddleston said in a recent episode that a recent interview that episodes 4 and 5 take off in directions that he didn't expect and jump into new territory. So Eric, what I am thinking is that episode 3, another big exposition, dialogue heavy info dump. And then episodes 4 and 5 is where we ratchet this shit up to a new level.
Yeah, I think hopefully episode 3 will give us more about what's going on the other side of the TVA and perhaps why Lady Loki is so hellbent on blowing them up.
I love it. All right, you got any stuff?
Yes,
think
I do.
Cool?
When Loki looks at the Ragnarok file, it says codename Revengers, which of course is the joke team name that they called themselves in that film.
I did not catch that. That's a good one.
I also want to shout out to a couple of brands who apparently survived to the year 2050 and were being sold in that store. I saw Arm & Hammer, Dove, Vaseline, Axe, Suave, Hostess, Wise, General Mills, PepsiCo, Coca-Cola, Charmin, Alienware, Cuisine Art, and Dell.
Wow, I'm surprised Dell made it.
Yeah, I thought Dell was done already, as is. I guess this is the all timeline where Dell became the Apple of their time.
Oh, good for them in this alternate, terrible, cataclysmic timeline. All right, that'll do it for us. Again, if you guys have any theories or questions, hit us up at PostCredPod. Definitely leave us a 5-star review, and you can leave questions there. We'd be happy to answer them on air. And tune in next week as we continue to tackle Loki episode by episode.
Yes, sir. All right, brother.
Take it easy.
Peace.
I'm going to make him an offer again.
My name is Maximus Decimus Meridius.